This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about a new 7-month research and reporting project at WNIN, our affiliate in Evansville, about the many ways COVID has had an impact on the Midwest. It's called COVID Between the Coasts, and it launched as a podcast series this week. On Monday, we talked to people who led the project, heard about a piece focused on essential workers. And today, we're going to talk to reporters behind an episode on survivor stories and to the professors who worked with students to interview people and analyze data around the Midwest. And if you have questions or comments on our show today, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. Our show, most of our show is pre-recorded today, so we can't get your questions and comments in front of the panel, but we would love for the conversation to happen there on our Facebook and Twitter feeds. We're joined by two guests. Sarah Cooper is a reporter and producer at WNIN. Welcome back, Sarah.
Nice to be back.
And Juliana Dumphy is a freelance journalist. Hi, Juliana.
Hi, how are you?
Doing okay. So, Sarah, there are so many different stories, of course, about how this pandemic has affected people. What stories did you want to find and help people tell, I guess? Or did you even know at the onset?
Sure. You know, it's kind of a case of we thought we knew, but, you know, things developed. And so I think our goal throughout was to find sort of the uniquely Midwestern voice in all of this, because, you know, we heard a lot of East Coast, West Coast, kind of overseas news right off the bat. But, you know, the COVID-19 was in the Midwest in one fashion or another this whole time. So I think we wanted to find the voices who had been, you know, ill themselves, people who had lost businesses, maybe were suffering just from other sort of social effects, cultural impact of the virus.
So then how did that evolve from what you, the story you thought you were going to tell to the story you ultimately told? What are some good examples you can point to?
Sure. Well, when we first started, that was, I guess, maybe May, you know, we had sort of anticipated that we had had a big first wave in the Midwest, things would calm down, and then we would expect to see another big wave in the fall, you know, with flu and everything. But the way it evolved is that the Midwest never really saw the huge, huge spikes that other places saw. And it was pretty calm, you know, throughout the summer. So while we thought we were going to find all of these stories about, you know, just hospitals having to set up field hospitals and things like that, that never materialized. You know, here we are now. So we'll see with this big surge. But you know, at first we were looking for stories that just never really came to pass like they did on the coast. So we found, you know, those uniquely Midwestern kind of stories.
So what was your approach to this piece about survivor stories? How did you decide how to present these stories?
So when I first began, it was really fascinating because I immediately was looking for the people who had the worst symptoms, who was suffering the most, who was really experiencing COVID. Mm. And it was funny how quickly that expanded, because as I was searching, I was looking in the depths of social media, digging deep into different support groups and things of that sort. And that would lead me to looking in the comments and then looking at people's personal pages and other works that were related to the area. And I actually found that COVID victims aren't just people who contracted the virus, but rather lives were truly impacted.
Sarah, when you hear the phrase survivor story, I think a lot of people think about someone who caught COVID and survived the virus. How did you think of the framing around this?
So in that same way, you know, people who maybe were sick were in the hospital, and you do see news stories when people are finally wheeled out of the hospital after being there for a month and a half, you know, so those were, I think, what we first thought we were going to see a lot of. But, and there are those stories, but we also started seeing stories about people who, you know, their business that opened in March, you know, had to shut right away because they just never stood a chance against the economic shutdowns. Or, you know, we found one story where a rumor about COVID cases ended up in closing a business. You know, there actually was never a case. It was just sort of this hysteria. And so I would classify those people as victims of coronavirus, of COVID-19, because they've lost, you know, their way of life in a way. And I know Juliana found a lot of those instances.
We're talking with Sarah Cooper, reporter and producer at WNIN, and Juliana Dunphy, a freelance journalist, who are both working on a project from WNIN in Evansville called COVID Between the Coasts. It's a podcast project that launched this week. And so, Juliana, I mean, you did talk to people who actually recovered from COVID. What'd you learn from them?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that when I was approaching it, and I was even just telling people about what I was doing, seeing if they were even interested in telling me their stories, I would say, I'm looking for COVID survivors in the Midwest. And I had a lot of lashback on that. There was a lot of, I don't consider myself a survivor. Yeah, I had the virus. Yeah, I recovered from it, but I'm still suffering the repercussions of this pandemic. That was one of my biggest takeaways, I think.
Repercussions as in the ones that we're all feeling, whether we got the virus or not? Or are you talking about people who are, I guess, still experiencing symptoms?
I would say both. So there's people, obviously, the economics behind it, people who lost their businesses, their way of lives. But even the people who contracted the virus, maybe they didn't lose anything in terms of money or career-wise, but there's a stigma behind having the virus. I was hearing people say, okay, if I got the virus, that must have meant that I wasn't taking it seriously. I was partying, or I was putting others at risk, when that wasn't the case at all. I just was one of the unlucky ones.
Julian,
so there's a lot of social impacts behind it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard the same. How did you get involved in this project, by the way, Juliana? What attracted you to it?
Oh my goodness, pure luck. So I am really early in my career, and I have no professional experience creating, producing podcasts. And here I was, just this young, hungry journalist looking to get involved, blowing up LinkedIn. And that's when Steve reached out to me. We knew each other from an old professor of mine. And he just said, you want a shot at this? Go for it.
And Sarah, when we come back to the pieces themselves, I mean, did anything surprise you when you started hearing all of these stories in detail?
I think, you know, the interviews that Juliana got, and she got a lot, but the ones that are in the pieces, one common thing that I heard was just this feeling of sort of loneliness and isolation. And I know she has one lady that, she got it pretty early on, and just, she had nowhere to turn. You know, no one was giving her a test. No one was giving her ideas of how to make herself better. They said, don't come to the hospital, basically, until you're at death's door, you know? And so I think in a lot of the voices she got, there's sort of this idea of just like almost being on an island and no one can tell you what to do. And even with some of the people who maybe didn't have it, there is still that feeling of loneliness. And like she mentioned, sort of the stigma of having caught the virus. And even though maybe you're completely better, people still are hesitant to invite you over or talk to you or do things with you because you've had COVID-19.
Juliana, we here at the talk show, we've considered doing a show with survivors. But you know what? We just had such a hard time just finding people, and eventually we just shelved the idea. How did you find people to talk to?
A lot of searching. I would go into one random support group. I'd go through all of the comments, which would lead me to a random Facebook page. And one of the people I interviewed was a chef who actually had to close down one of his businesses. And the way that I found him was he was doing charity work. He was starting a nonprofit to help others, even though he had just lost the business on his own. So I actually was reaching out to him for a totally different reason. I wanted to show my support. And then I saw that behind this, he's suffering severely.
Okay, so severely. But the pandemic, Juliana, is still happening. So for a lot of people, the issues they faced are still right in front of them. Was it a challenge for some people to talk about?
I actually think that the reason I was able to speak to the people that I did, and it wasn't the classic oversharers, if you will, I think people are feeling so isolated, so frustrated, so hurt that they're actually willing to speak up and truly share the full story.
Was that, I mean, did it take a while for to warm people up, though? Or I'm sure it was different from interview to interview. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. You as a journalist have talked to a lot of people. You know that there is a degree of warming people up to it. But did it seem like that stigma that you talked about earlier was a barrier for some of these people?
Of course, I think that they felt it was important to share that. No, it wasn't because they were being irresponsible, or no, because they had it at one point. It doesn't mean that they were being reckless, or that maybe because they recovered, it doesn't mean that they're not still suffering. I actually think that, yes, at the beginning, I had to open them up a little bit, say, hey, we understand that the Midwest lacked and was neglected attention. You guys were kind of left there as all of the cities were immediately panicking. I think that just made them ready to speak up.
Sarah, what do you hope people take away from this piece on survivor stories? More than anything, I guess.
I think a couple of the things that we've mentioned is just that you may not even know how you got it. You know, it's not like you're being irresponsible and going out and misbehaving. You know, you can just get it and have no idea how. And then I think there is a level of compassion we need to have for survivors, just knowing that they, you know, have been through something, whether it's physically or, you know, losing their business, but also just mentally. You know, it's wearing on all of us. And I think that just being able to listen and not judge and understand that this is something that's still ongoing. You know, you can't speak too soon about how any of this is going to turn out. So I think just being able to listen to survivor stories and, you know, just offer them an ear to hear, especially some of these Midwestern voices we're hearing, you know, they kind of, like Juliana was saying, no attention was paid to the Midwest for a long time. And we are seeing this huge surge. So I think we just need to be especially kind and compassionate to one another right now.
Sarah Cooper is a reporter and producer at WNIN. Sarah, thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you.
Juliana Dunphy is a freelance journalist. Juliana, thanks for your work and thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about a new research and reporting project at WNIN, our affiliate in Evansville, about how COVID-19 has had an impact on the Midwest. And coming up, we'll hear from professors who worked with students to interview people and analyze data about the pandemic. We're back in 90 seconds. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking today about a new 7-month research and reporting project at WNIN, our affiliate in Evansville, about the many ways COVID has an impact on the Midwest. It's called COVID Between the Coasts, and it launched as a podcast series this week. At the start of the show, we heard about a piece of the project that focused on survivor stories. And now, two professors who worked with students to interview people and analyze data about the pandemic are with us. We have Tamara Wandel, an associate professor of communications at the University of Evansville. Tamara, welcome.
Hey, thank you very much for having me today.
Darren Weber is also with us. He's an assistant professor of mathematics at the University of Evansville. Darren, great to have you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Tamara, how did you get involved with this? Had you done anything like it before?
Well, not exactly like this. I had done a change lab course, and change lab courses at the University of Evansville are where we basically identify some sort of community need or societal need, and then we link with a client, whether that's a business or a non-for-profit organization, and then we work to kind of solve or combat or make a dent in whatever that issue or challenges. So I'd done change lab courses before with like anti-tobacco things associated with youth across the state of Indiana. But this collaborative piece was totally new. We'd never done anything like that in terms of investigative journalism.
Can you explain how your episode in the series is structured? You and Darren each had a group of students, right?
Correct. Yeah. So I had students working on more of the like interviewing and reporting end. And then Darren was the master of the data analysis.
And so what did that look like? What did the relationship with or I guess the professional work with you and the students, each respective group of students, look like? If you could sort of break that down and illustrate it for us.
Yeah. Darren, you want to take this?
Yeah. So we had talked with Steve Berger and Sarah Cooper from WNIN, and we were at least my team was asking them questions as far as what they were looking at investigating, what they needed to know from the data perspective. And then our students took away from that conversation, from those questions and those follow-ups, a sense of what needed to be investigated, what we needed to grab from the internet, what we needed to grab from the Census Bureau to try and answer some questions as to what they were interested in investigating and reporting on.
From my team, the kind of the reporting end of it, we were looking at the seven states that COVID between the coast is focused on. So Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. So those were our seven states that COVID between the coast is focused on. And then Steve and Sarah from WNIN directed us in terms of like getting some fast facts about those seven states, looking into number of COVID positives, number of deaths, different area issues. So my students would do preliminary interviews in all of those states and then provide that data to that data in those prelim interviews to Sarah and Steve to decide what they may or may not want to run with.
So Darren Weber, what made you interested enough to work on this big project?
Well, first of all, it's, you know, the major topic for today, right? Everybody is interested in knowing more about COVID, knowing more about how it's impacting our communities. So that first and foremost was an interesting aspect of the project altogether. But then again, like Tamara said, this is a ChangeLab class for me as well. And so the goal of our class is to be able to give our students a real practical experience using real data, as messy as it may be. And there is no better example of that than working with COVID data. And so being able to give our students the experience of having to find the data, work with it, clean it up, and analyze it was a huge experience boost for our students and their progress as data scientists.
As a professor of mathematics, I mean, did you have to build your own kinds of formulas to crunch this? I mean, I have very limited experience with mathematics. I had enough to get through a bachelor's degree, but I definitely didn't focus on it. How did you crunch this?
So we looked at what was available from the COVID aspect, whether, you know, we had cases, deaths, hospitalizations, number of positive tests, number of tests total, also the demographic data, racial breakdowns of zip codes, income breakdown between zip codes, all those different demographics that you can get from the Census Bureau. And so what we did was we used a lot of statistical tools in order to solve that. So we didn't actually come up with any new formulas. What we tried to do was see what was available and then use the appropriate statistical tools and to provide a statistical foundation to the analysis. So it's very much like it's very much like baking. You know, you have the ingredients there, but how you put it together is the creative part. How you put it together is the important part. If you put it together bad, if you put too much salt in it, then it's going to turn out to be a bad tasting dish. And the same thing with statistical analysis. If you don't use the right tools, if you don't check your assumptions, you'll end up with some bad results.
What a great comparison. Tamara, what then was your goal when you started planning this out? What did you want the students to find and report on?
Well, I mean, anytime you have a client, so our client, if you will, was WNIN, you know, my main concern was making sure that we fed them what was necessary for them to move forward on all their podcasts. But I think the real fun came in later when I added an assignment in for the students to create their own podcasts. So that was kind of like their customized stories, if you will, based on what they were interested in. Obviously under the umbrella of COVID, but that's when it was exciting because I wanted them to be able to like have that experience of digging for sources, you know, having that experience of running into a lot of rejections, if you will, because it's harder to get people to be willing to be interviewed on tough subjects sometimes. So that was really cool to watch them dig for the research and then just participate in those interviews to have that experience where they're, you know, gathering that data and they're making a story out of something that not necessarily is an obvious story to begin with.
What was it about? Was there something about the freedom of the podcast format, the freedom to really unpack things outside of a time constraint that was appealing to you or and the students for that matter?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So in general, most of the stories that they'd done in, you know, academia were either like essay oriented or maybe a more basic news piece. I mean, this one had just had complete creative freedom. And none of my students had done an official podcast before, except for one of the students, Emily Ormson. She's pretty cool on the guitar. So she's done some stuff like that, but nothing to do with, you know, news and information. So the idea that they were creating these and a bit participatory in the editing process was neat. And obviously they're interviewing people that they've never met. You know, we're looking at these seven states, so we're doing it by Zooms or by telephone. And you know, stumbling through that process was pretty great. And I have one anecdotal story. It's kind of awful, but it is hilarious. And one of my great students, his name's Ben Godden. He's a business major. And so he and his teammate, Maddie Jessup, are interviewing these inmates, these incarcerated individuals from Marion, Ohio. And that Marion prison was a hotbed at one point for COVID cases. So this was like terrific that we got these sources and we're interviewing these, or they're interviewing these prisoners, convicted for murders, in fact. And so at the start, Ben was super nervous. And so he asked for the gentleman's name, and then Jason answers his name. And then Ben said, may I ask what you're in for? And he said, you know, I was convicted for murder. And Ben goes, great, great, thanks, that's good. And Maddie and Ben and I are looking at each other in horror. You know, you're like, no, Ben. So, but, you know, so silly stuff like that, just stumbling through, getting used to interviews.
Oh, it is definitely a learning curve, and I can attest to that indeed. So then when it comes to the, figuring out what then, as I was speaking with Steve and Sarah about how they ended up formulating this, they said, and this happens to journalists all the time, Tamara, as I'm sure you're aware, you go in thinking you're going to report on one thing, and the story ends up telling itself in the way that really it should be told. Did you find that to be the case? Did you find this sort of natural evolution to the story demanding that it be told a certain way?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely the one in that nine podcast series that WNIN is doing, the one of ours is on student athletes and kind of how they've all been affected through the recruitment process, particularly junior and seniors in high school that had kind of banked on, you know, a D1 athletic scholarship. So the student working on that, Nicole Tucker, is already interested in sports. She's doing even a really cool NFL mentorship program the semester. But anyway, so she was kind of looking into it in a different way. And then the recruitment process part, like how it's impacted those students and impacted coaches, sort of took over the story and in a way that I don't think she originally planned, but it was a much better story. And she could see that too. So that was kind of neat to see her light up on that.
Darren, how did you decide what data to look for and focus on here?
It was based off of what Sarah and Steve originally were asking for. They wanted to get an idea of what kind of communities communities in different cities were being affected and how they were being affected. So my students ended up going out and finding a couple of COVID sources, which was actually more difficult than we originally thought, just because of the reporting issues and the tracking issues that have been plaguing this country since the beginning. So finding the right source, finding the right COVID data was an important step. And then finding and being able to grab and analyze the Census Bureau information. We had a brainstorm as far as what we thought would be interesting to look at. So we looked at several different demographics from income, race, education level, but we also looked at some non-intuitive or at least not aspects you would think of at the front, like public transportation, use of public transportation. And so being able to break that down within each of the zip codes was something that our students thought would be a great way of being able to get a distinction between what communities are being affected and in what way.
And what then did you find along those lines?
Well, we found something that was a little bit surprising to me, to be honest. What we found was we looked at several cities across the Midwest, specifically zeroing in on the city borders. And what we found was that no two cities are affected by the same obstacles. You know, you might have a situation where there's a high correlation with COVID cases and, say, a racial demographic in Louisville, Kentucky. But that same thing doesn't apply to Indianapolis and Milwaukee. But in Indianapolis, you might have income being a huge factor when it comes to COVID cases. But that's not the case in Chicago, where public transportation happens to be a huge issue, but public transportation isn't a huge issue in any other cities. So what we found was that no two cities are dealing with the same type of impact. No two cities are dealing with the same type of obstacles. And so having a one-size-fit-all plan isn't really going to work, because different cities have to tailor their approach to their communities. You know, we can have some general rules, we can have some general guidelines to think about, but the city planners, the city officials, the city administration, the city government is going to have to take what they see from other cities, but then adapt it to fit their communities and their people.
Did you seem to find anything that seemed to be universal among cities?
No, we didn't. We did not. Nothing, not one demographic that we looked at was a significant correlation with COVID in any of our seven cities or any of our cities of the seven states.
Wow. And so I guess for me to pose the same kind of question that I posed to Tamara, did this seem to evolve for you crunching the data? Did you decide then that you had to look at one thing in one city versus another thing in another city? Did it evolve? Did it seem to want to tell its own story?
It absolutely did. So at the beginning, we had just a huge, wide open, ask from WNIN as far as what was happening in these different cities. And so we were looking at all different types of demographics. And so going through this process and seeing what's affecting some cities and not others, we kind of narrowed down our approach to look at a certain set of demographics for every city to kind of rein in all the possible information we could possibly get. Because the Census Bureau provides just a wealth of information. And so being able to go through all of that just wasn't practical. So we really had to tailor our focus to what we thought and what we were seeing, what the data was telling us might be important.
Darren, what were some of the biggest challenges that you and your students faced while you were looking for this good data?
The COVID reporting information. Different cities are reporting them in different ways. Different county health departments are making different types of COVID information available. For example, Columbus, Ohio, they don't give specific numbers, they give ranges of numbers. And that affects how we do our statistical analysis. Whereas Indianapolis provides really good point-by-point information from COVID. And so we were able to do a better, more statistically sophisticated analysis for Indianapolis, for the city of Indianapolis, because the data that provided was not in ranges, but actually the hard numbers.
I don't want to get too into the weeds on data, but I am curious how then you were able to take this different data from one city and sort of compare it to the different data from another city, since they're reporting it in different ways. Were you able to, I'm going to impress you with a term here, Darren, were you able to find a common denominator then if we're talking to a math professor, why not? Were you able to find then a way to make this data compare to this data in a way that you could kind of push the two together and make a comparison that way?
We can, based off of different analyses. So there are different statistical tests for different situations. And so we used one statistical test for cities like Indianapolis that gave us the actual numbers, but we had to resort to other types of statistical tests that were geared towards ranges that Columbus was giving us. And so the end result ended up being a same type of analysis. We were looking at statistical significance. So we were able to determine that for each of our demographics. But the tests that we had to use, the analysis that we had to perform was different. So the end result was okay, was the same as far as being able to compare, but the process to get there was very different.
Tamara, we have just about a minute left in this segment. I hate to give you so little time to kind of unpack what Darren is saying, but when you get When you found out that data, when you found out that that cities are reporting things differently, and you were able to then look at what Darren was bringing to you, how did you then put that together and present it in a way that was easy to understand?
Well, for us, it was fantastic to have that data because it helped us to understand where the hotbeds really were, where the Midwestern hotbeds were, and then that drove where we sought sources. So that's how we utilize the data, in particular my team.
We will be back after a quick break. We're talking about some of the stories in a new research and reporting project from WNIN, the NPR station in Evansville, about the many ways COVID has had an impact on the Midwest. And we are with Tamara Wandel, Associate Professor of Communications at the University of Evansville, and Darren Weber, an Assistant Professor of Mathematics at the University of Evansville. And I look forward to talking more when we come back in 2 minutes. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on the many, many ways COVID has impacted the Midwest. A new 7-month research and reporting project is out this week from WNIN, our affiliate in Evansville. It's called COVID Between the Coasts, and it launched as a podcast series this week. We're talking today about about one part of the series, which involves students interviewing people across the region and analyzing data about the pandemic. And we are joined by Darren Weber, Assistant Professor of Mathematics at the University of Evansville, and Tamara Wandel, Associate Professor of Communications at the University of Evansville. And so, Tamara, what did you and your students think of working on an audio project as opposed to something like a written report that students might be more accustomed to?
Yeah, well, it was brand new to all of them. So there's an added element of excitement, but there was a bit of trepidation too, because it was so new that they were researching how to utilize Audacity and other software programs in order to create and edit the podcast. But WNIN, Sarah and Steve in particular, were phenomenal in allowing the students just to really utilize their own voices and try things out, some successes, some failures. But in terms of our customized pieces that the students did, those podcasts, they had free rein to pursue whatever that they had kind of looked into when we were researching COVID in those 7 states, and then they could pursue whatever topic they wanted. So that part was exciting for the students.
And you've worked on some other, you've had them work on other podcasts too as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did a student athlete piece that is a part of WNIN's 9 series formal part, but we also are going to have some podcasts that will be thrown up on the WNIN website. So we looked at economic disparity across the 7 states, and in particular, the one student, Avery Pierboom, she looked into how a lot of high schoolers have been negatively impacted throughout this COVID process, not only in terms of that move to virtual learning, online learning, but how a lot of them in low-income areas were forced to take on the role of caregiver to their younger siblings and sometimes get second jobs and third jobs. So, we sometimes forget these young people are working so terribly hard, not just to get through their studies, but just to be helpful in their own families.
I want to come back to the interviews that your students did with the prisoners in Ohio. What did they learn from them? We kind of talked about some of the challenges of interviewing people who, I guess, make you anxious. But what did they come up with after those interviews?
Yeah, we were really looking to what we found out was, and just in terms of how the folks in the prison systems were handling social distancing. And then we did uncover an interesting part within the Ohio prison system, and Marion in particular, that we looked at, which was how, as they were this hotbed, the testing was getting to be kind of a nightmare for prison officials. And there were some lapses in, I guess, in protocol of how the testing was done and at often gloves weren't exchanged in between tests and that sort of thing. So there was a lot of learning going on in those prisons, just as there was, you know, across the United States. We're all doing the best we can to keep up with it. But that was you know, incredibly insightful to learn. So once we learned that from the two prisoners, what had occurred in terms of their testing protocols and procedures, we went and interviewed some prison officials in other states to see how they were handling it and talked to a lot of healthcare workers about how we can all work together in the future to make sure there's enough gloves provided to those prisons and other things so that we're switching those out in between tests.
Who are some of the other interesting people that the students interviewed? Who do you think, I guess, left the biggest impression on them and helped tell this important story?
That particular one within the prison system?
Well, I guess outside of that as well. Were there others that made a big impact on the students?
Oh, absolutely. And I think what was neat was, and I'm sure I drove them nuts at times, but, you know, they'd think they'd have the story and they'd already interviewed two people, three people. And I'm like, let's get a different perspective. Let's go back. Let's get more. And then so I think once they would get those extra interviews, they did realize you almost have, you know, if you've done a story before, whether it's in print or radio, you know, you have to get too much information and then whittle that down. And that's what makes your most amazing story in the end. So they talked to, I mean, my gosh, we did a handful of podcasts. So they talked to D1 coaches in the seven different states. They talked to an incredible person who oversees the overall prison system in Michigan. We talked to, gosh, I'm telling you, it was so neat. There's so many untold stories. We wish we had more time for it.
For a story this big, that affects all of us all the time. I guess what I'm getting at is, what was it like, practically speaking, to do this project during the pandemic for both you and the students? I assume it complicated things, but I don't know. Maybe there were some pros and cons.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's be honest. We're all kind of sick of COVID at this point, aren't we? So, right. So there we are taking a, you know, 15-week semester course and saying, hey, let's focus on it even more. So I think it was interesting to watch the students. You know, here we are in higher education. They're completely impacted by this as well, the students working on this research project. So they're trying to get used to online learning for some classes. Other classes are hybrids. Then we're dealing with, like, one of the students who designed our logo, the COVID Between the Coasts logo, is one of my students. She's over in India, so she's doing everything online, obviously, but she's a University of Evansville student. So there's just all these moving parts, moving variables to the project. And that was really challenging. But in the end, I think it was just so insightful for the students to get a hand in that.
Darren, it can be really hard sometimes to make data stories work on the radio, particularly. It's easy when you've got a visual representation, you can see graphs and you can see how things compare. But journalists putting audio features together are typically warned about saying using too many numbers in their story, I guess. How did you approach that challenge with your students? How do you make data engaging for the audience?
Well, that's a really good question. Luckily, we, Sarah Cooper and Steve, were able to do the podcast part of it, because myself and my students are not journalists whatsoever. We don't have nearly just a fraction of the skills that Dr. Wandel does with her and her students. So our goal was to be able to present the information as clear as possible to Sarah and to Steve, so that they could do the hard work of figuring out what's best way of presenting that in podcast form. So whether that was, we had Sarah come in one day and interview our students, asking them questions about what they saw in the data, what they found, what was some difficult parts to work with. And the students did a fantastic job of being able to synthesize what they learned into a understandable language. And so I'm really proud of them for being able to translate what we say in our statistical classes to what needs to be said for public consumption.
Is it hard to make? Please go ahead.
Sorry, I'll jump in and say that the ever-changing numbers are a bit of a nightmare in terms of that. You know, just when we would get something down with the number of positive cases in an area and we would record audio for that, we'd check it a few days later, and, you know, it's incredible. These numbers are so rapidly shifting. And so you always feel like your podcast is almost out of date. So we were constantly going over and re-recording pieces so that we had more up-to-date, appropriate numbers.
Darren, I want to make an assumption here, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong about it, by all means. But it seems to me that, I mean, journalists and mathematicians are two sort of different personality types. The priorities are different for the two of them. How, as the go-between, have you had to think about how what data to give them without giving them too much? Or do you think about that and then you let them sort it out?
I don't think it's so much of what data to give them and what not to. It's a way of translating the data in a consumable format and being able to interpret what we're seeing from a statistical standpoint to what is happening out there. So it's that translation rather than being a filter.
Tamara, I mean, it seems like a project like this, something that gets published and heard by people around the state, might encourage more ownership over the work than something like a traditional essay. Have your students reacted to their work in a different way than they usually do?
Oh yeah. Like, there are a lot more nerves associated with it, knowing, first of all, they wanted to, you know, hopefully please Sarah and Steve from WNIN, but, you know, way beyond that, they're like, oh my gosh, my family's going to listen to this. You know, I'm going to share it with some friends. Some of them are D1 athletes at U of E, and they're like, their coaches are kind of following the stories. So there is some added excitement and nerves with that.
Do you think that was motivating for them, motivating more so than a grade might be to getting it right? And do you think that really made them grow more than a traditional assignment might?
I have no doubt it does. I'm always into the real world value of, you know, the practicality pieces of a class. So I kind of do that in most classes, and I think a lot of profs do. But these kind of set up, like, it's impossible not to do that, because we can't even predict, as the faculty, we can't predict all the nuances that are going to arise through the semester and the challenges and how we were struggling to get sources, not only, you know, in a traditional fashion, but now we're sifting through Facebook and Instagram trying to find sources of where some of the, like in Michigan, you know, there was that huge lake party way back when, and then Minnesota had some, or, you know, back toward the spring break times. So we're tracking people down through social media, and that's just stuff the students have never done. And I think they had a sincere appreciation for news gathering after that. Not one of my students started off truly interested in journalism at the beginning of the semester. And several of them have said, like, they get it. They get the excitement of it when you finally break that story or get that interview you've been searching for. You know, that's just, I could talk about that all day long in a discussion or a lecture, but until they experience it, it's not real to them.
Have any of your students? Oh, please go ahead, Darren.
I was going to say a similar situation with my students. You know, I did a terrible job of kind of explaining the scope and the importance and the scale of this project at the beginning. And then Steve Berger came in to talk with our students and kind of summing up what they needed and getting an idea of what the graphic is that we're going to be creating for the WNIN website. And after Steve came in and he explained what the project was, the scope of it, and what they're looking for. And after he left, my students made several comments of, holy cow, I had no idea how huge this was, the importance of this project. And so that just, I mean, they were doing fantastic work to begin with, but just from that point on, I could see that they had a much higher level of investment now in the project and wanting to get it perfect.
So along
and I from the very beginning of the semester, I was so excited and shared too much. So I had a couple students drop after the first week because they were like, "No way, do we want to do this much work?"
So Darren, I guess along those lines, I mean, no one would agree that there is an overall positive associated with the pandemic, okay? But we have to find the good in everything. Do you think that having this reality that we're in and that we're navigating and moving through every single day, it has been a tremendous learning experience for your students? And Tamara, I want to ask you the same thing after Darren answers. But to have this real data that matters, and it's not just a project that you come up with and put in front of them. How much value do you think there is in that, actually doing something that the rest of the world can look at and apply?
It's incredibly valuable for our recent graduates. With our program is our statistics and data science program at UE is relatively new. We've had a couple of batches of graduates, and it's this class, this Change Lab class, that has put them into their jobs that they're in right now because of the experience that they get. It's data consultancy work while you're still in college, and so there's not a professor nicely, you know, curating the information and putting it in a format that's just perfect for you to be able to do then, for the students to be able to then do the analysis. They have to do all that hard work, which is what they're going to have to do when they graduate and they get jobs as data scientists. And so it's an incredibly valuable experience. And I have students who repeat the course several times, taking it 3-4 times in their career here at UE, just because of how much they've enjoyed it and how much value they see in the course as being able to get them to where they want to go post-graduation.
Tamara, same question. I mean, it's really easy to say, hey, go out and report on this and then just take whatever they get back. But this is real journalism that you're putting in front of them. How much of a throwing them into the fire has this been for their professional growth?
Well, the professional growth is huge, but I thought what one thing that was kind of neat was not just the skill sets they were getting from, you know, communicating with others and then writing those radio scripts up, the podcast scripts, and then creating the podcast. But I think one of the neat things was to watch them start to care about some of these greater issues associated with COVID. Like, for example, in one of the podcasts, they ended up talking to Dr. Noah Taylor, who's a radiation oncologist. So they're interviewing him, and he's discussing how cancer screenings were put off last spring when everything was shut down. And now we have this exponential growth in the number of cancers that we're already seeing, and also late stage cancers. And like, that's not the stuff typically that 19, 20 year olds are thinking about or worried about for the most part. And so suddenly they were fascinated with that and how that was, you know, impacting our Midwestern states. And then they were looking at UK studies and other studies around the world. And so it was that sort of high-end thinking, that critical thinking was neat to watch them do.
Have any of your students then come away with this, from this rather, with new ideas about what they want to do for a career?
Yeah, a couple of them have talked about how they didn't realize how much the transferable skills would work. So I personally do some consulting on data analytics with pro sports teams. And one of the students, actually Darren and I share her as a student in different courses, but she was always very interested in the sports end. And she's suddenly realizing how they can play together. Because actually the communication, the communicative element and data really, to me, should always be linked.
Darren, same kind of question. Have any of your students sort of looked at a career shift? Did this light a fire under any of them?
Well, my students come in as wanting to be data scientists post-graduation to begin with. It's one of the requirements to be able to get into my class is to have a certain set of courses to be able to get you ready for that. And so I think this has renewed that interest. It's allowed students to be able to identify, this is the kind of data science work I want to do, because data scientists are working in all different types of fields. As Tamara mentioned before, you know, you got sports analytics, but there's also government work that needs to be done. There's finance, economic work that needs to be done. There are even fashion companies who employ data scientists. And so this gives our students an opportunity to find their niche, find their field that they want to get into, that they care about more.
The pandemic has been something that none of us saw coming and none of us expected. Do you think, Darren, that new fields of data analytics and science might emerge as a result of the pandemic?
I think we were seeing new mathematical models being developed. And I should caveat that with the sense that we already had these mathematical models built and created and developed. Now what we're doing is refining them. They're focusing in on different aspects of this particular pandemic and what variables we're missing, what variables become important now, and basically fine-tuning those mathematical models from before.
I want to thank our guests for taking the time today. Great work from Tamara Wandel, an associate professor of communications at the University of Evansville. Tamara, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Darren Weber is an assistant professor of mathematics at the University of Evansville. Great insight, Darren. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found anywhere you get podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.